What's amazing about GDP is that it begins in the 40s as a kind of technical tool for figuring out how much of the British economy can be dedicated to the war effort. Then in the 50s and 60s, it becomes a way of telling whether the US or the Soviet Union is winning the Cold War.
Let me ask then, what is value? Is it a mistake to quantify it? I'll come to you, Will, because you were talking at the beginning or referring to, for example, an Aristotelian view of that issue. But if we put it to you, and I put it to you, what's your view in terms of what is value, and can you, should you, quantify it?
Wow. I mean, I've been thinking about this most of my life and not have got to an answer. Sorry about that. I mean, first of all, I'd agree with Daniel. I mean, human beings, since the beginning of time, trade, the exchange. And so, you know, I exchange my apples for your pears, and we reach at a point where, you know, we're both reasonably satisfied with the apples and pears we ended up with. Where there's trade, there is economic growth. That's why the Mediterranean became the kind of locus for growth, a kind of in the millennia before the birth of Christ. Imagining a society in which we don't trade, and that there are, and imagining a society in which there aren't exchange values that are thrown up thereby, is impossible, in my view. So then the question is, you know, what do you do when it's obvious that the value that has been placed on something scarce, or the value that society is placing on something, doesn't reflect kind of its intrinsic value or your sense of intrinsic value? Here it gets incredibly subjective. I mean, you know, I might consider it's worthwhile spending 15 quid for a bottle of wine, and you think it's ridiculous. Often, when you're standing at the bar, judging where you're going to buy a pint of X or Y, actually the price mechanism is an indicator of actually kind of the quality of what you're about to drink. So, you know, you hold that in mind, at the same time as recognizing that actually, you know, it's probably absurd to spend £2,495 on a pair of spectacles. The reason why I mentioned this economist, Piero Saffra, was there's a big tradition in economics that kind of launched with Adam Smith and finished really with him, in which economists try to say the value is in some way about the hours of labor that have been inputted into that product, including innovation hours. And try as you can't actually get to a kind of standardization of it. You end up kind of with a mathematics that doesn't work. I'm not sure whether AI might solve it, and Daniel should speak to that. So, you know, you're ending up with us trading, and you're ending up with having to make judgments. And here, I think, is where democracy kind of is so vital as a kind of adjunct of markets and an adjunct of capitalism. It's open to us to express through the ballot box whether we consider that actually property prices are too high and therefore, you know, should be taxed. And then you get some kind of collective preference that kind of be expressed and which then kind of public authorities can act on. But I mean, and you're recognizing in that actually there will be occasions where actually we collectively take the view that actually it is absurd that house prices should be kind of 12 times average earnings, whatever it
but,
may
but
be.
But you say, I mean, let me bring you on this, Abby, but the point I was going to pick up on with Will was that we have kind of democratization of what is value.
Yeah.
But that kind of what's the market does anyway, isn't it? You know, we all pay the price for what we think is worthwhile.
Let me try and sort of situate this debate a little bit. So what Will is talking about, and the approach that historically Will tends to take to these issues, is much more like classical political economy, because it basically says we live in an open system that's always becoming something else. Economics is always political. Politics is always, you know, who pays, who gains is something we shouldn't leave to technocracy. So how we define value is something that's always changing, mutable, and democratic processes should have a say in it. That is analytically very different from the neoclassical economics that Richard and David Daniel are talking about. Forgive me. So I'm not being entirely facetious here. When Richard says, I'm a centrist because I believe that the utopian paradigm of perfectly competitive markets and a perfectly efficient price mechanism are unrealistic, he is a centrist in the way that Nikita Khrushchev was a centrist in the Soviet Union. Because what mainstream economics does is it's not the Thatcherite position, it's not the first best world position. It says perfect markets are a useful heuristic for understanding how markets in the real world fail. But that idea of, and when you always hear professional economists and Blairites talk about mending market failures, what they're saying, though, is not nearly as metaphysically neutral as it sounds, though, because the implication of mending market failures is you're joining the circuitry in an eventually fully efficient machine. You're taking the horizon closer to the perfectly efficient market, which isn't humanly possible.
Abby, let me bring Daniel in on this card because he wants to talk about it. But also, I mean, we had Khrushchev, we've had Stalin, we're getting into all sorts of things. But Dan, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah. Economists, political economists, philosophers have debated these questions for centuries. I find a very helpful way to think about this question of value is that essentially just simplify the picture, and really there are two different types of value. Mm. There is market value, which is when all of us act as consumers in a marketplace. And then there is some sort of social value when we act as citizens in a community.
Do you think those two are different?
Sometimes those things align. Very often they don't. And I think this kind of misalignment and our failure collectively to think of ourselves as citizens in a community rather than consumers in a market, this misalignment between these values is a source of a lot of problems. So let me give you an example. So someone mentioned before technology companies. I think one of the big problems today with how all of us interact with large technology companies, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter, you know, whatever it might be, whether it's, you know, the latest wave of generative systems, DALL-E, ChatGPT, and so on, is that we interact with these systems as if we're consumers in a market. That we interact with them like we might interact with an apple and an orange in a supermarket or a, you know, whatever kind of particular product it might be. But our use of these technologies has not simply economic implications, but political implications. As everyone will know, you know, these technology companies aren't just having economic consequences for society, but they're shaping the kind of social scaffolding on which we're all trying to live our political lives, influencing, you know, democracy, influencing political deliberation, and so on. And so I think the issue with a lot of these technology companies and how we interact with them is that we are interacting with them not as we should be, which is as thinking about our role as citizens in a community and what these technologies do to our political community, but instead we're treating them like products and services, like consumers in a market. And the consequence is that we're attaching the kind of wrong value to this interaction that we're having with these technologies.
A wrong value. I'm going to pick that one up.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Richard, what's your thoughts on this?
Clearly my role on this panel is to move from being Khrushchev to Gorbachev during the course of the conversation.
Gorbachev's the third one. We'll get to Putin soon.
And look what happened to him.
So I just think everyone's sort of navigating around the same problem, which is because values is not possible to perfectly characterize, do we then give up on using it as part of the system, right? So value in some general sense is, I think, is in the eye of the beholder. I was hoping we'd have a view outside and we could say who would pay how much for that view, but everybody's going to have a different view of what that's worth. I think it's problematic, as you imply, Daniel, that to use that attempted quantification to get markets to function is very difficult. And I think gamification is quite interesting in this, in terms of how you see people trying to render human life as a game, and they often want to have a score or some sort of number associated with it. And it's very reductive, it's very arid. And so you've got this problem of quantifiable things and unquantifiable things that sit alongside each other. So I think your point, Daniel, about there being different types of value or different types of pricing mechanisms is valid. And then we're trying to reconcile, where does that mechanism add value? I think we're giving up on too easily on where it could add value.
Will, do you want to call?
I just want to say, I mean, I think you have to have some numbers, actually. I mean, if you're running a health foundation, a foundation trust, and you know, where are you going to put scarce resources? And you have to have some sense of actually what's going to buy quality of life years for most people. And you can't, and not to make that call is itself a call. I mean, you abdicate responsibility for actually trying to use your limited budget to produce kind of best social outcomes. And there's some quite interesting developments going on in kind of debates about how to do public expenditure well. A group of economists led by Professor Richard Layard, who's a kind of ardent advocate of well-being and happiness, and supported by Lord Gus O'Donnell, who used to be cabinet secretary, produced a paper, kind of very interesting paper, about kind of 10 days ago, saying every item of public expenditure can be put through the lens of actually how much well-being it promotes. You can then say that, you know, building this bridge there will produce more well-being than tunneling there. You can make a judgment about kind of mental well-being is incredibly important, so more resource should go into kind of developing cognitive behavioral therapy centers, for example. Money on spent in early years is fantastically promoting well-being. It's absurd. Sure Start centers have gone from 3,000 to 1,000. Let's build them back up. And the returns from that are, and you start to see that you can allocate spending around well-being criteria and actually produces value for citizens.
It begins to sound a bit like utilitarianism, a kind of fallacific calculus, perhaps, almost. Daniel,
it's a desiccating calculating
well,
machine.
Well, you know, you say that, I say it's a calculator.
It's the mirror image of Soviet socialism.
Daniel, you wanted to come in on this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I think you have to start with some numbers. The issue, and I think it's the big issue that we face in many areas of kind of political life, is that what we choose to count, though, over time becomes what counts. And that's sort of what has happened, just to come back to GDP. What's amazing about GDP is that it begins in the 40s as a kind of technical tool for figuring out how much of the British economy can be dedicated to the war effort and how much can be kept at home for civilians. Then in the 50s and 60s, it becomes a way of telling whether the US or the Soviet Union is winning the Cold War. And so both of those are very narrow, very technical, very narrow, very technical uses of this measure, a very narrow sense of what counts. Fast forward, though, to today, and GDP has morphed into something that has kind of far more of a sense of this is what we collectively value and care about. And this thing that we began by counting in a very narrow sense has become, in a way, again, you know, what counts. And so I think there's an issue about how what begins as a way of measuring market value can, through the very fact we pay so much attention to it and we put so much effort into it, become a kind of proxy measure almost by accident of what it is that we value from a social point of view.
We're moving towards, I think, what is really the next theme I want to come on to, which is about how we do then.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below, or visit iai.tv for more debates and talks from the world's leading thinkers on today's biggest ideas.